And welcome back to Nachi Yomi. Today we are going to be learning together Daniel Perek Ches, the 8th chapter of the book of Daniel. Our chapter is about another vision that Daniel has. It is 27 psukim long, and let's take a look at it inside. The first two psukim are the introduction. In this, he gives us the context for this prophecy. It is occurring in the third year of the reign of Belshazzar, and Daniel has this other vision. He talks about how he's in Shushan Habira, and he describes that he is on the banks of the Ulai River. A few things to ponder before we go further. You'll notice that now we are no longer in Aramaic. Although the first perek was in Hebrew and the second perek onwards was Aramaic, now it is back to Hebrew. Why the switch back to Hebrew? The Da'at Mikra points out, if you look at the clues, you'll understand very carefully. And that is because you'll notice that this is the third year of Belshazzar. Belshazzar only reigned for 3 years, which means that this is the end of his kingdom. In fact, if you look at the psukim carefully, it describes him as Belshazzar Melech, but he is not described as the king of Babylon, because his tenure is about to end. This is about to happen. The prophecy, the writing on the wall, and his assassination are imminent, which means to say that the Babylonian Empire is failing. That explains why it switches out of Aramaic, which is a Babylonian language, and now back into Hebrew, to almost to indicate it's the, so to speak, literary technique describing the prophecy that it is encasing. And that's why the prophecy begins talking about Persia and not Babylon. Let's take a look inside a little further. Moreover, why is he in Shushan? Shushan is the capital of Persia, not Babylon. So even though he's under the reign of Belshazzar at this point in time, he's already shifting towards the future as well. Which domain? Where is the Ulai River today? It is interesting that if you go to Shushan, which is a little bit inaccessible these days, but it is the city called Susa. That is where it is in Iran. And it is interesting that Susa is between two large rivers. It is between it is south of the Tigris River, but it's between the Karke and Dez rivers. It is argued that this river, the Ulai River, is referred to the Karke River, which is just to the side of Susa, which is where the river that is being described over here. What is the significance of this prophecy being told that it's by the water? The Gemara describes that a prophet can only receive prophecy in Israel. If not, one of the places that they can receive prophecy is by the water indicating purity or connection to the land of Israel, which perhaps explains why he could receive this prophecy. Let's jump straight in. So first we hear about the ram. Psukim Gimel to Dalet, we hear about a ram with two horns. One horn is slightly taller than the other, even though it grew later. And it goes west, north, and south. And no creature can stand up before this ram. It becomes very successful and it grows rather big. That's our first creature. Then we hear a second creature, Psukim Hey to Zion, the he-goat. This is now he sees a Tzefir HaYizim. He sees this he-goat coming from the west, and it passes over the entire earth without touching the earth. It is an obvious horn in its forehead, almost like a unicorn-esque description here. And he comes to the ram and charges at the ram with huge force. He gores the ram, breaks its horns, the horn rendering the ayil, the ram, useless and powerless, and then proceeds to trample him to death, and there's no one there to save the ram. And then something interesting happens. We hear about the horns of this Aes. It was unicorn-esque at the beginning, but the horn is cracked and splits into four directions. And then what happens is, out of one of the horns, a small horn is developed, and the horn grows longer and extends to the south and the east and towards the beautiful land. It grows until the heavens and is brought down and tries to bring down the stars, the celestial seers, and tramples upon them until it challenges the chief, the host of the hosts. Because of the daily sacrifices stopped in the holy temple, because of this horn, the sacrifices are stopped, the Tamid, and the holy temple is left empty. And it arranges an army against the daily sacrifice and hurls truth to the ground. It's very successful. Just a quick question over here is, what's this whole business about the daily sacrifice? Ibn Yahya, or Yosef Ibn Yahya, explains this refers to the factional fighting which occurs at the times of Hyrcanus and Aristobulus, which are the two of the Hashmonaim, Hasmonean dynasty, of fighting one another. In fact, there's a terrible episode in which the one of the factions is inside the confines of the Mikdash, the one is outside the confines of the Mikdash. There's a siege which is laid, but in order to preserve the daily sacrifice, sacrifice, they allow the outside faction, the besieging faction, allows a animal to be taken up into the Beis HaMikdash, to be raised to the Beis HaMikdash on a daily basis to bring the Korban Tamid, until one day they decide they're going to foil those inside the Beis HaMikdash and they bring a pig up. And they, as it goes up the walls, the Gemara in Baba Kama describes how its claws, so to speak, scratch the walls, and the whole earth shakes because of that. That was Batala Tamid. There's one of the moments where, so to speak, the infighting Jewish sectarianism caused a tremendous amount of damage to the nation of Israel. And now, at this point in time, Daniel goes from Sukkim Yud Gimel to Yud Dalet. He describes, as he says, he hears holy voices speaking to each other, and he asked, how long would it be till the day, how long would it last that the daily sacrifice would be annulled and the holy sanctuary abandoned? And he's asked, answered, and he said, and the answer he receives is, "Vayomer alai ad erev boiker, until evening and morning." There'll be the clarification, the cleanliness will be returned after 2,300 years. We'll see what that means in a moment. Actually, maybe perhaps we will take a quick look at it now. What are these 2,300 years? Seems like this is a prediction of the end. You could obviously see the Sefer Daniel lends itself to a lot of interpretation as to when the end can and will be. So Rashi has a very complex calculation. He says like this. If you take the amount of time of the nation of Israel as a formulated nation until the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, the 210 years in Egypt, the 480 years from Exodus to the building of the Beis HaMikdash, the 410 years of the first Beis HaMikdash, the 70 years of God's Bavel, the 420 years of the second Beis HaMikdash, minus the 6, at which point the Korban Tamid was Mevotel, if you add those, if you add that to the number of the Kates, as we're going to see in the later chapter, is 1,290 years. You add that all together, it gives you a sum total of 2,874 years, which is 2,300, which is what the Pasuk describes, plus the gematria of Erev and Boker, which is 574, giving you the 2,874 altogether. So when is the Kates? The Kates is from the 1290 years from the Bittul HaTamid, from the time that the Tamid was stopped, which is 6 years before the end of the second Beis HaMikdash, which is the year 64 Common Era. And that actually lands us squarely on the year 1224 Common Era. And that's when Rashi's prediction is as to when the Kates should be. Obviously, we've passed that date. It's interesting to know that Rashi passed away in the year 1105, over a century before the prediction that he believes that is extracted from these psukim. Nonetheless, it is a fascinating prediction. Obviously, the fact that a prediction was missed does not mean it was incorrect, but it could also mean that we missed the opportunity of the Messianic era, that moment. The Malvim says, no, if in fact, all you need to do is like this, is the Malvim does a cheshbon, and he says it's 2,300 years from when this prophecy took place. Meaning, he's being told now, take it literally, 2,300 years. The Malvim says, I'll take us to the year, Mishnas Hayalafim Taf Reb Resh Lamed Ches, which takes us to the year, says the Malvim, of 5638. That approximates the year 1878. What is interesting about that, or 1879, what is fascinating about that is that actually the Malbim passes away in September 18th, 1879, right? So he is actually, he passed away right around just before his prediction as to when the Kates would be. But nonetheless, again, as the Malbim makes explicit in Sefer Chagai, the fact that a Kates was missed does not mean that it was incorrect. It means that we missed the opportunity of the Messianic era. I would just say as well, just to be a little, perhaps the guard on a limb, if you take the amount of years that Israel's been in Golos altogether, so the 210 years of Egypt, the 70 years of Babylon, and the 1950 years we've been in Golos up till the year 5780, from the year 70 Common Era to the year 2020 Common Era, that gives us 2,230 years, which is 70 years shy of the 2,300 years of Golos in general, which is not too far away in the future, but it is an endpoint, and hopefully we can bring Mashiach before that endpoint as well. Just food for thought. As the Mitzvot points out, clearly we're not going to work this out, and it's not helpful to work this out. We should be hoping that God willing Mashiach comes, and davening for it, and acting in such a way that we're deserving of it, and then we'll know retroactively how all these psukim actually work out. But at this point in time, we don't know what the actual prophecy means. So Daniel now tries to understand the vision. So these are Psukim, Vites Vav to Chavav, in which he saw a man, an image of a man beside him, and the heavenly voice on the Ulai River emanates from the river and turns to Gavriel, who is this specter next to him, and says to him, tell the dream to Daniel. Gavriel approaches Daniel, and Daniel is terrified, and he prostrates himself in front of this celestial being. And he explains the vision is about the end of time. And as he speaks, Daniel falls into sleep. And the man, this Gabriel, touches him. And he makes Daniel stand up. And he explains to him what he's about to see at the end of days. He says the ram refers to Media and Persia. The he-goat refers to Greece. The large horn refers to the first emperor, Alexander the Great. The four horns are as the kingdom of Greece splits up into its four factions, which are not as powerful as all of them. And then finally, there's this last horn we'll get to in a moment, which is brazen and smart and destructive and successful. He doesn't explain what that is. And he describes how this small horn, which will be the last king, will destroy the whole nation. And through his cunning, he will destroy so many, and he'll rise up against the chief of chiefs, against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he's told the vision is going to be true, but Daniel should keep it secret. So obviously to the time that Daniel's living, not to the time now that we're reading about it. So just a few points to ponder. Why is the ram Persia and Media? It seems that the ram represents the two horns. The one horn is shorter, that's Media, which was first the Medians, and then the Persians who succeeded them. Why is the goat Greece? It's interesting that we have these, so to speak, the numbers is this very fast, the idea of the hooves not touching the ground and spreading over the common world, that was the speed with which Alexander the Macedonian conquered the entire known area. And it is interesting that the last king who's so destructive, who is that? The Rashi, Ibn Ezra, and the Malbim say is referring to Rome. In the succession we've seen, that's the fourth Malchus. The Ibn Ezra and the Ralbag say, no, it refers to the rebellion, the revolts under the Seleucid Greeks with Antiochus. We're talking referring to that era, which makes sense. That's what Ibn Yechia was describing as the struggle with the Hashmonaim. And Rav Sadia says it refers to the Arab Spring. It refers to the Fourth Empire. Fascinating as to what this could be. Again, as Rambam says, Lo yedu ech sheyiyu ad sheyiyu, we will not know what they are until we actually see it. And we are waiting for that opportunity to see that, God willing. Finally, it concludes with a very curious pasuk Chav Zayin Vanir Daniel Niyesi. He says, I'm Daniel. I was very confused. And I was sick. And I got up and I went back to the king's court. I was dismayed by the vision, and no one could explain it to him. But surely Gabriel just explained it to him. So what does that mean? The Ibn Yechia says that he was sick because of the force of the vision which sublimated his physical senses, and he was confused because he didn't understand the case, which should be a lesson to us. If Daniel did not understand the case, then we certainly won't understand it, even though we have a little more historic perspective. The Malbim has a remarkable insight over here, and that is that this prophecy came in the third year of Belshazzar. And Belshazzar is and essentially, if you think about the prophecy he's doing, it's excluding the first kingdom. It's only talking about the ram, the goat, and the fourth horn, right? Which means to say that we're talking about Persian Media, Greece, and perhaps Rome, or the other options for the fourth Malchus. But that means to say that the first one's being excluded, but Daniel's living during the reign of Belshazzar. So Daniel is about to witness, he's about to be called to the king's palace to explain and interpret the writing on the wall, which is going to be the precursor to the assassination of Belshazzar and the fall of the Babylonian Empire, which means Daniel is essentially saying, I was shocked to realize that the vision I had this night was about to come true as I went to read the writing on the wall. And that's what's so shocking to Daniel. And his perspective, his emotional perspective as he responds to this prophecy. With this, we close. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.